for what's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Expressions of concern from European leaders following newspaper interviews in which President-elect Donald Trump said the NATO alliance was obsolete, predicted more countries would leave the European Union, and hinted at an easing of sanctions on Russia in exchange for a nuclear arms deal. Some EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels took a cautious approach, among them Danish Foreign Minister Anders Samuelsen, who references Mr. Trump's use of Twitter for his views.
I think that we'll have to see. We'll have to wait and see what is going to be the reality, because we are going to move away, I guess, from a kind of Twitter diplomacy and then into a reality. And the reality is sometimes quite difficult, and perhaps more difficult than what is going on Twitter.
French President Francois Hollande said the EU is prepared to pursue transatlantic cooperation with Washington, but on the basis of its interests and values. He said Europe does not need outside advice to tell it what to do. After Mr. Trump criticized German Chancellor Angela Merkel's migration policy as catastrophic, the German leader said Monday, the destiny of the EU is in the hands of member states. She said it will pursue strong, forward-looking policies on matters of job creation, terrorism, strong borders, and internal security. The top judge of Gambia's Supreme Court Monday pulled out of a hearing on President Yahya Jammeh's petition to overturn the results of the December 1st election that he lost to opposition candidate and president-elect Adama Barrow, who is to take office Thursday. Nigeria's Chief Justice Emmanuel Fagbenle recused himself from the injunction to bar Mr. Barrow from assuming office. Gambia relies on judges from other countries because of a lack of trained professionals. The West African bloc ECOWAS has failed to mediate the crisis. This is VOA News. UN humanitarian official Jamie Goldbrick Monday said an estimated 10,000 civilians have died and almost 40,000 others have been wounded in the nearly two-year conflict in Yemen.
I think that the humanitarian community continues to work in an environment which is faced with impunity against some of the rights abuses that have taken place regarding civilian infrastructure and civilians themselves.
The conflict pits a Saudi coalition backing government of President Abdurrabu Mansour Hadi against Shia Houthi rebels. Meanwhile, UN envoy Ismail Old Sheikh Ahmed is in Yemen, meeting with senior leaders to appeal for a return to an April truce. Syrian rebels, who earlier said they would not have agreed to take part in Russia-Iran-Turkey-sponsored peace talks next week in Kazakhstan, aimed at ending the country's nearly six-year conflict. The meetings will focus on a ceasefire, humanitarian issues, and the violations by the regime. Zubair Iqbal is a regional Middle East Institute scholar.
Basically, what they're trying to do is to use their primary instrument of influence, and that is, if you do not cooperate with us in these negotiations and work out a deal with us, we will join with either Al-Qaeda or with ISIS.
The opposition suffered a major setback in December when it lost the rebel-held districts of eastern Aleppo. Iraqi special forces battled Islamic State defenders Monday in key neighborhoods of eastern Mosul after routing the IS fighters from Mosul University. The latest fighting occurring in the Shirta and Andalus neighborhoods, among the last remaining sectors between government-held territory and the Tigris River. A new UN report said Sudan's recent counterinsurgency operation in rest of Darfur has limited rebel activity, but it also said the two rebel groups, the Justice and Equality Movement, and a faction of the Sudanese Liberation Army have withdrawn to Libya and South Sudan to pursue their insurgencies. The International Monetary Fund slightly raised its forecast for U.S. economic growth this year and next. Chief economist Maurice Obstfeld saying U.S. growth will expand 2.3% this year and a bit faster next year.
An accumulation of recent data suggests that the global economic landscape started to shift in the second half of 2016. Development since last summer indicates somewhat greater growth momentum coming into the new year in a number of important economies.
President-elect Trump has pledged lower taxes, regulatory reform, and infrastructure spending. The IMF also forecast improving growth in China, Germany, Japan, and Britain. The last American astronaut to walk on the moon, Eugene Cernan, has died at age 82 as a result of what the family called ongoing health issues. Cernan and co-astronaut Harrison Schmitt spent 3 days on the moon December 1972 as part of the Apollo 17 mission. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambia's President Yahya Jammeh secretly recalls ECOWAS chairperson President Sirleaf of Liberia, but the regional body says Jammeh must step down on Thursday.
President Sirleaf remains focused on the ECOWAS position, which is that there should be a peaceful transfer of power from President Jammeh to the president-elect once his tenure expires.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. Meanwhile, there were more defections Monday from President Jammeh's government. There are mixed reactions to South Sudan President Salva Kiir's decision to create four new states. And voter registration kicked off yesterday in Kenya for that country's presidential election.
Of course, for like any other exercise, there will be teething problems on the first day in terms of deployment. Some people may not have arrived at their centers in good time, but these are not major problems.
Andrew Limo is communication manager for Kenya's independent electoral body and boundaries commission. A new study finds that cutting tobacco use is good for health and economics. And U.S. immigration kicks off protest against President-elect Donald Trump. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who is chairperson of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, says she remains focused that come Thursday, January 19, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh will step down and President-elect Adama Barrow will be sworn in. This comes after President Jammeh secretly recorded his conversation with President Sirleaf and played it on Gambian national radio and television. Mr. Jammeh had called the ECOWAS chairperson and pleaded with her to get the regional body to accept his proposal for peace, which he said included the Supreme Court hearing his challenge against the December 1st election results. Liberia's Information Minister Eugene Nambuye says President Sirleaf is undeterred by President Jammeh's undiplomatic conduct.
Yesterday night at about 7:30 p.m. or thereabouts, President Jammeh placed a telephone call to President Sirleaf, and they had a conversation wherein he was requesting President Sirleaf as the chair of ECOWAS to listen to some of his proposals that he had for peace. The president listened to his proposal and also informed him that he would transmit such to the authority of heads of state. And all the while they were having this conversation in a very undiplomatic and unpresidential manner, President Jammeh was recording the conversation and he played it live on Gambian TV. But the position of ECOWAS remains the same that President Jammeh has to turn power over to the democratically elected president of the Gambia, Mr. Adama Barrow, and that is the position of Mr. Sirleaf.
Personally, what does President Sirleaf feel about this? I mean, as you said, this is undiplomatic. What does she feel? Does she feel Jammeh was trying to, embarrass her?
Well, she realized that he was just abused by President Jammeh, that he has not been sincere in the mediation discussions that have been happening. So, but that is besides the point. President Sirleaf remains focused on the ECOWAS position, which is that there should be a peaceful transfer of power from President Jammeh to the president-elect once his tenure expires. All the efforts by ECOWAS, led by President Sirleaf and President Buhari, along with the former president of Ghana, President Mahama, all of these efforts have been geared towards finding a peaceful solution to the Gambian political crisis. But the position of ECOWAS, the position of the AU, is that based on the mandate that was given to Adama Barrow by the people of the Gambia, President Jammeh has to take over power once his tenure ends.
2 days from now, it will be the inauguration of President-elect Adama Barrow. Is President Sirleaf planning to go to Banjul for the inauguration?
What I can say is that once the tenure of Yahya Jammeh ends, ECOWAS, AU, and the world will recognize Adama Barrow as the legitimate president of the Gambia. The fact that President Jammeh remains recalcitrant and is refusing to allow the democratic transition to happen in a peaceful manner, in a very smooth manner, is a matter of suffering to ECOWAS. But the position of ECOWAS and the position of the African Union, the position of the United Nations, and the position that was reiterated by the ECOWAS leaders just a few days ago in Bamako, is that this smooth transition must happen, and once the tenure ends, President Jammeh should give power over to the president-elect Adama Barrow as the legitimate leader of the Gambia.
But I guess what everybody is concerned about is that ECOWAS may say that, but yet Yahya Jammeh remains in power. Let's say comes Thursday, the 19th of January, Barrow is out of the country and Jammeh will still be in power.
Barrow is out of the country pending his inauguration. This is the decision of the authority of heads of state of ECOWAS. The government of Nigeria, as led by President Salih, who is also the chair of ECOWAS, has a position which is very consistent with the position of ECOWAS, with the position of the EU, and the position of the United Nations. That is, the smooth transfer of power to happen once the tenure of Yahya Jammeh ends. And that tenure ends on Thursday. And beginning at that point at which this transition will happen, ECOWAS will recognize Adama Barrow as the legitimate leader of the Gambia.
Mr. Nambwe, it's always nice to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Eugene Nambwe is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. There were more defections on Monday from President Yahya Jammeh's government, according to the U.S.-based opposition Freedom newspaper. Justice Minister Mama Singate has fled the country and is now in neighboring Senegal. She joins a growing list of Jammeh cabinet members who have fled the country, including now the foreign minister. Joining us with the latest from the Senegalese capital, Dakar, is reporter Sydney Marina. Good morning to you again, Sydney.
Good morning, James.
Thank you very much again. Always a pleasure to have you on Daybreak Africa. It is now Tuesday morning, one more day, and it's Thursday, the 19th of January, and it will be time for the inauguration of Adama Barrow. What's the latest?
There is a lot of latest news coming from Banjul at this time. We received information that the Minister for Foreign Affairs of Yahya Jammeh, Nene Magdal Gay, has also tendered her resignation in protest of Jammeh's attempt to stay in power at all costs. Also in Banjul, we received information about the death of the 8-year-old son of President-elect Adama Barrow, who is currently in Dakar on safety ground with some members of the coalition. Adama himself is expected to be escorted by ECOWAS through Senegal to the Gambia on his inauguration day.
Let's come back to the inauguration, which is Thursday, 19th. What's the latest on that front?
Today, the international media were all expecting Adama Barrow, who we understand supposed to give a press conference in his days from Dakar. I personally was at this press conference, so we waited until last minute, and the special advisor to President-elect Adama Barrow came in, and then he delivered a statement on behalf of President-elect. He said the swearing-in of President-elect Adama Barrow will go as planned, and also they will do everything for other ECOWAS leaders and global leaders to attend this inauguration. He also said ECOWAS is currently doing everything to ensure the safety and security of President-elect Adama Barrow. And also Adama will be inaugurated not in foreign land, but in the Gambia on Thursday.
Who is going to do the swearing-in? Is the Gambian Supreme Court functional now?
This is a very important question, James, because the Supreme Court, headed by the Nigerian-born Chief Justice, made it very clear that, you know, he cannot make any order sought by lawyers of President Jammeh to stop the inauguration of Adama Barrow on the 19th January. So he said the injunction filed by the state, he is named in the petition, and therefore he had to rescue himself from the case because of vested interest. Basically, he adjourned the hearing to May and November, when Supreme Court justices from Nigeria and Sierra Leone will be available to determine the outcome of this legal challenge.
Sydney, you mentioned Adama Barrow's 8-year-old son died from a dog bite. Whose dog bit him, and where did it take place?
Adama's son, according to the information, he was bit by a dog on Sunday, and then they rushed him to the hospital, and he died due to the wounds that were inflicted on him by the barking dog. Many people say his death is mysterious because they cannot just understand how a dog can bite an 8-year-old boy that led to his death. According to information, he was staying with his grandma where this incident took place.
You mentioned the resignation of Gambia's foreign minister. Do we know where he is now?
The letter obtained by myself, which I have a copy of dated 16 January 2017, is a formal letter of resignation of Minister of Foreign Affairs, Nena Magdolge. She tendered her resignation today, and according to sources, she also fled to Dakar. Meanwhile, the Minister of Trade, Abdou Diop, also resigned today, according to sources in Banjul, and he has also left Banjul and currently in Dakar. So already we have at least 5 ministers from the Jammeh cabinet that resigned in protest of Yahya Jammeh attempt to stay in power.
That was reporter Sini Marina speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and today's Tuesday, January 17th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. We send shout out to listeners on our VOA affiliate station, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, and Diamond FM in Tamale, Ghana. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Kenya kicked off its final mass voter registration drive yesterday, Monday, ahead of the August presidential election. But the electoral process has been fraught with controversy, including protests against the electoral body and a continuous new law that allows manual voting and counting as a backup for biometric voting systems. VOA's Jill Craig spoke with new voters at some registration sites in Nairobi.
It's a hot day here on the sidewalk outside Nairobi's St. Peter Clavers Primary School. But the 20 or so people standing in line behind a small desk don't seem to mind. They are here to register to vote in Kenya's upcoming August elections.
It's our right to vote for the next president and our MPs and all of that.
This is the first day of the final mass voter registration drive being conducted by Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. The other took place around this same time last year. The drive will end in 1 month's time, and so far, IEBC communication manager Andrew Limo says things seem to be going well.
Yeah, I think the reports are getting in. It's encouraging, of course, for like any other exercise. There will be teething problems on the first day in terms of deployment. Some people may not have arrived at their centers in good time, and so they may have opened late and things like that. But these are not major problems.
But the IEBC has faced its share of challenges in the past. Protests organized by Kenya's political opposition in mid-2016 resulted in the entire electoral commission being replaced. President Uhuru Kenyatta recently signed an amendment to the election law allowing for manual voting and counting should the electronic system fail. The opposition argues this latest move opens the door for vote rigging. New voter Wyclef Kafwa says he is not in favor of the manual system and is unsure about the new electoral commission.
We are still in the process of weighing how it is. At this time, still early to say whether they are fine or they are not fine.
But first-time voter and university student Ted Mwathanyana says he's not concerned that these issues could negatively affect next year's elections.
When the right things are happening, there always has to be challenges. So I think it will all work out. People also have to accept the changes that we're having.
The IEBC's Limo says his organization is targeting the roughly 9 million Kenyans over the age of 18 who have a national ID card or passport but who have not yet registered to vote. Mass voter registration is scheduled to conclude February 14th, but potential voters can still register prior to 90 days before the elections by going to their constituency offices or public service centers. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
In South Sudan's capital, Juba, reactions to President Salva Kiir's decision to create 4 new states are mixed. This past weekend, Mr. Kiir unilaterally created the new states of Northern Upper Nile, Central Upper Nile, Marwood State, and Tumbura State. President Kiir has already created 28 states out of the original 10. Many civil society activists and residents think the government should concentrate more on restoring peace and improving security throughout the country rather than creating more states. Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Rajab Mohandis, executive director for the local NGO South Sudan Network for Democracy and Elections, or SUNDE, says the decision to create more states will cost more money at a time when South Sudan's economy continues to implode.
Creation of states means creating more positions for public servants and so on, and that means the need for resources. So in terms of the situation we have now, I think the government best knows how it's going to maintain this huge number of states.
Needless to say, Mohandis adds that it will be a challenge to budget for the needs of all 32 states, given the current economic and political crisis. Others disagree. Clement Arcangelo Joseph, president of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in South Sudan, welcomes the decision to create more states, saying it will boost service delivery to the people of South Sudan.
If it helps to solve the problem of our problems, and if it helps to improve the way how we manage services to our people, I think he has done the right thing.
But Joseph agrees that the government's first priority should be to provide security and ensure that people are able to move freely across the country.
As a church, our main interest is really to see how our people live in peace, in unity, so that they can prosper. So our priority focus is actually to see how we can also contribute towards a peaceful South Sudan.
Juba resident Lasu Ahmed opposes the decision, saying the government has failed to develop even the existing states and the capital of the country.
Even if we see the situation in Juba, our roads even are not tarmac, we should still focus on these few states that have been created recently, and we develop them up, and we see what is the way forward.
The SPLM-IO faction, allied to former first vice president Riek Machar, has condemned Mr. Kiir's decision to increase the number of the states to 32. In a press release, Mabior Garang, who heads the SPLM-IO National Committee for Information and Public Relations, says the decision to create more states without involving the citizens will lead to more conflict, including border disputes between communities. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Just days before Donald Trump's inauguration as the 45th president of the United States, demonstrations supporting immigrant and minority rights have begun in more than 65 cities nationwide. VOA immigration reporter Eileen Barros covered a rally in Washington at the Metropolitan African Methodist Episcopal Church, famous for its civil rights history.
The historic Metropolitan AME Church was again at capacity, this time for a rally urging President-elect Donald Trump to back away from some of the hardline policies he preached during his campaign.
Immigrant supporters are hosting rallies like this to urge President-elect Donald Trump not to pursue mass deportations and to uphold the DACA program that has helped more than 600,000 undocumented immigrants.
We bring our people in unity. African American, Asian American, Latinos to fight for immigration reform. We believe that right now the Republicans have the opportunity of their time because they always accuse President Obama that he has stopped immigration reform. Now they control the Senate, the Congress, the White House.
The Here to Stay rallies took place during a meaningful weekend, the federal holiday when Americans commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his tireless work to end racism and promote civil rights in the 1950s and 60s. More than 2,500 people stood together in the church to honor King and declared their intention to resist the Trump policies that they oppose.
I'm here to support these people. Whether you have or don't have documents, it doesn't matter. We came to fight and we have the same rights.
I'm come to support everybody who immigrant here, but we are American. Even not by the paper, but by heart, because we want a future for our children.
We're going to build the wall. We're going to build the wall. Look at this guy.
During the campaign before November's general election, Trump vowed to end the DACA program, build a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border, and deport between 2 million and 3 million people living in this country without permission, because he said they were criminals. He also said the DACA program helping immigrants' children was unconstitutional.
It's not a good message, especially for our youngsters and especially for our kids coming up and all that. It's not a good message. You
know? My family and I have sat down multiple times on the dinner table to speak about our rights, to speak about what is a raid, what if ICE agents come to our house. We have our documents organized, and we know what to do in case of deportation. But many families across the nation haven't done that yet.
Pinto is a DACA recipient, but still fears deportation. She says her older brother qualifies for immigration relief, but hasn't applied out of fear.
We don't know what this administration is going to come, and so we want to make sure that his information is protected.
And we're not going to start persecuting people here in the United States of America.
Minorities, immigrants, and politicians who support them said they would keep fighting for their rights and stand united. Eleni Barros, VOA News, Washington.
A study finds healthcare spending and lost productivity due to smoking cost the world more than $1 trillion every year. The joint study by the World Health Organization and the U.S. National Cancer Institute provides compelling evidence that tobacco control is good for health and economies. Lisa Schneier reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization estimates around 6 million people die prematurely every year from tobacco-related causes, most in developing countries. The figures are projected to rise to 8 million deaths annually by 2030 if nothing is done to stem the global tobacco epidemic. While tobacco use has widespread public health consequences, Jeremiah Paul of the WHO Tobacco Control Economics Unit warns it also poses a major global economic threat.
The global health and economic burden of tobacco use is enormous and is increasingly borne by low and middle income countries. Around 80% of the smokers live in low and middle income countries. There is more evidence from lower and middle income countries that tobacco control is effective even in low-resource settings. It also makes clear that the world's poor countries are on the front line of the tobacco epidemic.
The report argues many lives can be saved and national treasures can be enriched by implementing proven, cost-effective tobacco control measures. Frank Chalupka is Distinguished Professor of Economics and Public Health Director at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He says significant tax and price increases of tobacco products are the most effective and cost-effective of the interventions.
We also see that tax generates considerable revenues for governments, but at this time, only a fraction of those revenues are being used for tobacco control. We estimate, for example, that globally in 2013 and 14, tobacco excise taxes generated about $269 billion U.S. dollars in revenues, but governments around the world spent less than $1 billion of those revenues on tobacco control activities.
The study rejects assertions that tobacco control measures such as increasing taxes promote illicit trade in tobacco products, harm economies, lead to job losses, and disproportionately burden the poor. Chalupka says evidence shows that just the opposite is true. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who is chairperson of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, says she remains focused that come Thursday, January 19, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh will step down and President-elect Adama Barrow will be sworn in. That's it for this Tuesday, January 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
On Friday, January the 20th, all eyes will be on Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of the 45th U.S. President, Donald J. Trump. Be a part of history. Join VOA for 2 hours of special live coverage broadcast on radio and television and available on the internet at voanews.com. Tune in Friday, January 20th, starting at 16 hours Universal Time.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh fired 12 ambassadors after they called for him to step aside and allow the newly elected opposition leader, Adama Barrow, to take power. A recommendation he has also heard from ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.